Today on The Grave Talks, What's on the Other Side? A conversation with June Lundgren. June Lundgren is a psychic medium, demon seer, healer, animal communicator, and author. She was brought up by her grandmother on her mother's side. From a very young age, she learned to talk to the dead. For over 40 years, she's been assisting others in dealing with paranormal issues. Today's topics on The Grave Talks will include telepathic animal interaction, demonic possession, past life recall, and life beyond death.
I would have to say childhood, because ever since I can remember, my grandmother raised me, my maternal grandmother. And ever since I can remember, I've been able to see spirits. I've been able to communicate with them, been able to communicate with animals. It was natural to me. I thought everybody could do it. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that that was unusual.
Sure.
It was kind of interesting because at around 4.5 years old, maybe closer to 5, I would see demons in the way everybody else did. You know, there'd be a black mass or a shadow figure or, you know, a smoke or whatever. And when that occurred, I was able to see demons in their true form, and it scared me at first. But Michael the Archangel has been with me since birth. My grandmother said he was there, you know, when my mother actually just kind of dumped me off on my grandmother and grandfather. So he was there ever since then, and she would see him because she was a medium as well and psychic. And he said, don't worry about it. I'll protect you. They won't be able to see you. I want you to observe them. I want you to learn how they work and what they do. When you're a kid, you know, like, oh, it's a game. All right, I can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, but I've been doing that forever. And when I was a teenager, people would come to me and ask me questions and want my help and things like that. And I would help, you know, the best I could. And then I left for the military when I was 17. And they frown upon anything like that.
Yeah.
In the military, especially being, the Army wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
I spent 2 years in the Army, and you know, you kind of more or less stick to yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got my nurse's training. And then I switched from Army to Air Force because the Army had, you know, couldn't go any farther. And so I went to the Air Force and I got stuck at a SAC base. Oh, Lord, Strategic Air Command. Not so good. They're always in your business 24/7.
Okay.
So I always had to make sure I didn't mention anything about it, because my godfather, who was a bird colonel in the Air Force, once he found out I was going to be at the SAC base, he came, flew out and talked to me. He said, listen, don't say anything about what you can do. Don't even mention it. You know, keep quiet about it. Because there is a program where they are giving drugs like LSD and things like that to people, mushrooms, derivatives, to people with abilities to try to heighten their abilities.
Oh.
And he said, you do not want to go there with that one, because he worked for the OSI.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you don't want to have anything to do with that. And I'm like, no, thank you. I do not. So when people would come to me for help when I was in the military, it was always on the side. You know, it was never, I lived off base. Mm-hmm. And they would, you know, they would call me, they would come over.
How interesting. So, I mean, you have had these abilities, obviously, your whole life. When you look back into childhood, and you mentioned that you can communicate with animals as well. How, explain that concept to me in terms of, is it just as simple as it sounds, where you can hear or feel what, you know, they're trying to communicate? How does that work?
Yeah, for me, it's a little bit different.
Okay.
I have a friend who is an animal communicator.
Okay.
And she gets like feelings and visions And I get, mine is different. It's like I'm sitting down and I'm talking to you. At first, the animal is kind of startled and mm-hmm. taken aback by the fact that it can understand you mm-hmm. and that you can understand it. So once they feel comfortable with that, then it's like, oh, you know, this is what's wrong. You know, this person is like this way, or I want more meat, mm-hmm. or I don't like sleeping, you know, in my bed. I want to sleep on your bed, you know, that sort of thing. I had a case where they called me in for one dog. It says, my wife and I moved up from, the gentleman said, my wife and I moved up from California. Ever since we moved up from California, you know, the dog, and I can't remember the name of the dog, but he would snap at my wife and bark at her. And it's just like a totally different dog. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, let me talk to him, see what he has to say. And when I was talking to him, he said that she's unstable. He's like, she's unstable. And I said, what do you mean unstable? She's unstable. And I said, well, what is she doing? And he's like, she's worrying. She's worrying. There's a lot of worry there. There's a lot of stress there. And he's trying to help her to deal with it. And that's how one dog would do it for another. They would, you know, like snap at them, tell them, knock it off, snap out of it. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't realize that was going on. And so when I turned it back and I talked to her, I said, well, you know, this is what's going on. And she said, you're absolutely right. I am so stressed with the move and trying to get everything done that I've never even thought about it and how it would affect the dogs. So the other dog, they actually had three dogs. The other two dogs were the same, feeling the same way. Mm-hmm. So once I talked to the dog about it and told them, you know, what was going on and that it would be okay, she would work through it, then they never had another incident. So it's just about communicating.
When you are having those sort of communications with animals, is it as simple as that, where it's just a few, I mean, is it words? What are you receiving? Mm-hmm. Is it literally words, like in the English yeah. language, that, because they hear us talking, so I would assume that if they know a language, they know ours.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's words. It's like I'm talking to you.
It's just, wow.
How, it's exactly the same. It's just yeah. like, yeah, well, you know, this is this and that is that. And
how deep do they get in terms of their thinking and their conversations? Is it simplistic things like, she's stressed, I want more meat, I like this bed?
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's very simple. Mm-hmm. It's something that your eye would overlook if we didn't have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
You know, they're acting out for a reason. And other times, it's because they've been abused prior to the owner getting them. Mm-hmm. And they have to work through a lot of the issues that they've had from the abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, I had more than one client that said, you know, this, I don't know. I think the dog was abused, but I don't know what happened mm-hmm. and I don't know how to help them. So I talked to the dog and found out exactly what had happened. And so I told her, I said, this is what's happened. I said he was beaten constantly by a man. I said, that's why he's aggressive towards men. I said, he's insecure. He's afraid that he's going to end up back there. And so we just have to reassure him, talk to him, reassure him, help him to work things through. And that's all you have to do. Once they realize that they're safe, mm-hmm. that's not going to happen to them again, that they're never going back to that situation. You know, it takes them a little while, but they feel much better. And pretty soon things are much, much better for both of them.
When we talk to our pets, like I do it all the time. I have many yeah. pets, and it's just like, hey, how's it going? You know, like, hey, how are you? And I'll just tell them about my day. Right. And obviously they're attentive. Are they understanding what we're saying?
They're understanding the energy
okay.
behind what you're saying. Like, oh, it was a bad day, or I had a great day, because the energy changes with how you feel. Mm-hmm. And they get that energy, they draw that energy in, they can read it, they can experience it and say, oh, he's had a bad day. He needs some loveys, or I need to sit quietly with him, or he needs a lick, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they understand the energy more than anything, the intention and the energy.
I've heard this before from other guests, and I'm curious as to what your take on it is. Are animals psychic? Can they tell without us even saying anything? Because I have this sometimes. I'm sure most people do. You could just be sitting in the room. The dog may be in the other, you know, room, but they can see you or know that you're there. But they're just laying down. If you, in your mind, or if you feel distressed, or if you're almost thinking, come here, you know, like almost you'd verbally say it, but if you kind of do it mentally, sometimes mm-hmm. they react. Sometimes they seem to know that we are asking them to come here without even a word or a movement to be said. Are they that sensitive? I don't know if it's psychic's even the right word. Is it just an ability to sense something that maybe we're not so good at as people?
They're much more intuitive than humans are. They don't have the baggage we have. You know, they don't overthink things. They're very simplistic. And one of the things I learned when I was dead and went to the other side was that in the light realm as well as the dark realm, thought becomes reality. And it is the intention behind the thought that gives it power. And as with animals, it is your intention behind the thought. Your intention is, you know, you say, come here, you know, in your mind, you say telepathically, you say, come here, I love you.
Sure.
And they can get that energy. They're like, oh, he loves me. I need to go over there. Mm-hmm. It's more telepathic. People on the other side, you know, the angels and stuff, they think of verbal communication as like the lowest form of communication because they communicate telepathically. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's, people don't understand that. It's like when I would go on an investigation, when I first started doing investigation or going and helping somebody with a ghost problem or whatever, I would do it all telepathically. I had to learn to speak out loud because I was so used to talking to them telepathically that, and people just looking at you like, uh-huh, yeah, what? You know, and I'm like, oh, I got to say something. Okay, I got. So I would be like the go-between. Okay, this is what they're saying. This is what they want, and vice versa. So it's much easier to communicate telepathically. Mm-hmm. Animals are much simpler. They are closer to God than we are because, you know, some people will tell you they're without sin. Yeah, it depends upon your definition of sin. Dogs just are natural. Dogs are instinctive. So they really don't know what sin is or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But people think that animals can only come back as animals, but that's not true. They can incarnate as a person. It's not a big deal for them.
Can it work both ways?
Yeah, it does.
This is an interesting thought. Do you feel that there's ever animals that we have? Because sometimes we'll go, gosh, that dog acts just like a child or just like a person. Mm-hmm. They seem to really have a lot of characteristics that are more human than dog-like.
Right.
Is that ever a realization while they are alive in the form of a dog that I was once a person? Or vice versa, if someone is reincarnated as a human, people have those past life moments or memories. Right. And oftentimes we hear about it strictly on the human sense, but does anyone have any past life memories where they're on the
animals as well? They're like, because if they like say they died 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Right. And they were a dog.
Yeah.
And they decide, you know what? I'm tired of being a dog. I want to come back as a person. So then they'll come back incarnate as a person and they'll have a lot of characteristics of the dog. You know, they'll be loyal. They'll be sensitive. You know, they'll be very caring, very simplistic in nature, mm-hmm. and they'll love animal. They'll love other dogs. You know, they'll want to be around dogs. They'll be able to. Their energy will be such that other dogs are drawn to that person. It's really quite interesting to see. It's like when I go, I have a friend that lives in the UK in Essex. Mm-hmm. And when I first went over to visit 3 years ago, she said, now you got to watch my dog because he doesn't like anybody. He'll snap at you. He'll snap at your ankles and things like that. I'll try to keep him away from you. And I said, don't worry about it. It's not going to happen. So I go over there and I come inside the house and he starts looking me to death. My friend's like, what? I'm like, yeah, well, they can sense the angelic energy. Animals can sense an angel. They can sense a demon. They can sense an earthbound. Mm-hmm. They have all those abilities. People fail to listen to their animals, to watch their animals. You know, you'll see some of these shows on TV where, you know, the dog's growling up at the corner, or the dog won't go into this room, or you try to drag the dog in and they don't want to go. I'm like, really? Pay attention to your dog. They're more in tune with what's there than you are. You know, if people would pay more attention to their animals, they would get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah. If we knew what would it be a good thing if we were able to all intuitively hear what our pets are saying or thinking to us?
Yeah, I really think it would be a good thing because it gives you a closer bond. Mm-hmm. And it helps you to understand what they're going through and vice versa. I really think it is a good thing. My son has that ability as well since he was young, but he just doesn't talk about it, you know, a lot.
Sure.
But when he was young, he would, you know, talk about, no, mom, that's not what they want. They want this or they want that. I'm like, yeah, I know, you know, but it depends upon the individual. You know, some people want to push away their abilities and other people, you know, embrace them. But animals, it's not so easy to talk to all animals. Well, let's put it this way. I will not talk to bugs because they have no attention span whatsoever. It's so frustrating. It's like that now, you know, when I was little, I started, you know, talking to bugs.
Yeah.
And it's like, when I was old enough, I was thinking, oh, that's where that saying comes from, attention span of a gnat. Okay, now I get it.
It's like the ultimate ADD.
Yeah, it is. It's like, what? I'm gone. It's like,
is it because they have to make so many more split-second decisions much faster than we do as people? I mean, with how fast they move and they're able to evade a hand coming at them.
Yeah, it's that plus they're always hyper-aware. Mm-hmm. Because it's a survival mode for them. You know, you don't dally. You don't, you know, sit there and have a conversation with somebody because they're going to squish you or whatever.
Sure.
Know? But I warn them, you know, if you're a spider, don't come in my house because you'll be dog meat. Sorry.
I want to move on from the animals, but I have one more question about that since we're kind of on it. It's a question that it kind of ties into some other stuff we haven't really talked about yet, but have talked about many a times on the show, where there's attachments. People can mm-hmm. have attachments. Do pets, has it ever happened with pets? I don't think I've ever asked that question.
A dog will not have an attachment, but a dog spirit, you know, so, 9 times out of 10, 99.9% of the time, when a dog dies, it's like, I'm out of here. See ya. You know, and they ascend right away to mm-hmm. the other side. Once in a while, they will stay. And especially if they're like in the old days in the English castles, there are ghost dogs that they used as nannies. And they're still there trying to guard their charges.
Oh, wow.
There's, you know, if they're that devoted, they will stay. They will stay.
How interesting. I had a realization that, and you tell me your take on this. I didn't realize that this was probably something ghostly, but it didn't connect the dots till I was much older. When I was a child, I had a cat that passed away. It would always sleep on the end of my bed. Mm-hmm. It passes away. The new cat that we get really wants nothing to do with me and never really did. But the previous cat, it was great. It was a cat I had from birth to probably about 10 or so. And I remember that after the cat died, there was many nights, literally for the next 8 years that I lived there, that mm-hmm. I would feel that cat jump on the bed. Now, I never thought it to be ghostly. I always just thought it's muscle memory. I'm just used to that feeling of, you know, it does it every night and it's just in my head. Nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, it was the spirit of the dog. The cat, it wasn't earthbound.
Yeah.
People think that if they feel it or whatever, that it's earthbound, but not necessarily. It can ascend. And it'll come back and it'll stay there to comfort you until it's no longer needed. Just like a human, mm-hmm. you know, they will come back and they will stay with you until you're okay. And then they'll move on.
Wow. Yeah. It was something that I never really connected the dots. And the way I kind of connected the dots was it was probably, I don't know, 15 years after I had moved out and I was staying there again, mm-hmm. just for like a trip and just visiting. And I was in my old room. And woke up as I did in the morning. It was, and I felt that feeling. And I thought my parents' current cat at the time had come in, but my door was shut and I didn't know how it got in there. So looked up. There's no cat. There's no animal. So, but it's like, I wonder if that cat is still around there.
It's drawn to you. It's attached to you, it comes to visit you, that not anybody else. It's not staying there. It comes to visit you.
There was a short period after their last cat died that they were telling me, my parents, that they would hear the cat still doing its routine of going into the kitchen, moving its bowl around, and hacking up a hairball. The cat's dead. And my thought on that was, that really sucks. They still have hairballs when they're dead. That doesn't end. That's not fair.
Sounds like the last cat may have been earthbound for a little while.
Yeah.
Because if they're earthbound, they'll do the same routine that they did when they were alive, you know, including the hairballs.
And is that, is that an earthbound cat? Is there a thing as the residual, the energy repeating itself? Is that, do you believe that that is something, or are these always some version of the actual self?
Usually it's not like, you know, where you'll see an apparition and it'll be doing the same thing day in, day out and not react to you. It won't even know you're there.
Sure.
It's just like a film stuck in a loop.
Mm-hmm.
But if the animal actually reacts to you, mm-hmm. you know, you coming in the room or whatever, then it's definitely earthbound.
Okay. Earlier, we can move from pets, but it's been very fascinating. I didn't even mean to talk about them for that long, but I always love hearing perspectives that I haven't heard before, and you have some very interesting and compelling ones, so thank you for that. You were talking earlier that from a very young age, you could see demons,
mm-hmm.
and you, I know I'm paraphrasing here, but you were told to look at, you'll be able to see them, you're going to be protected. But you're supposed to watch their patterns and learn how they act. Tell me more about all of that. How did that begin? What was your first encounter with what you understood as a demon?
When I saw the changes, you know, I had seen them from a distance before, the demons. I'd seen the black mass and things like that, you know, and I just about blew them off. And then when I turned 4.5, a little between 4.5 and 5, my perception of them changed, and I saw them in their true form, which frightened me. And Michael came to me and he said, "Listen, don't worry about it. I want you to watch them, learn how they work, learn, you know, what they do and how they react." He said, "Because you're going to need this when you're older." And he said, "Just keep a watch." He said, "I will keep you invisible to them. They will not be able to see you." And so I watched all the time until I was a teenager and I left for the military. When I left for the military, I was in the Army for 2 years and I would see the demons from a distance, but not acknowledge them. And I got into the Air Force and I was working emergency room, and we got a call from one of the tech sergeants on base saying that there was an airman that was missing. He was last seen at a party And nobody had seen him since, and he didn't report for work. And I'm like, oh, great. So they wanted us. I had another guy with me. We were a couple techs. And we got in the ambulance, went over. And I think what the tech sergeant thought was, oh, I'm going to find a dead body, so I want you to take it away. But he opened up the door to the man's barracks room. And I could see him, you know, curled up against a wall and just really still. And I looked strained to see, and I could see he was still breathing. And I heard a sound, and I looked over to the left, and here's this demon, you know, sitting up by the ceiling, like it was waiting for him to die. And I told my friend that was with me, I said, we need to get him out of here, and we need to get him out of here now. My friend Boggs that worked with me, he knew all about my abilities, and his mom was she was a voodoo priestess. Mm-hmm. So he knew all about that sort of stuff. And one look at me, he said, you know, I knew there was something there that shouldn't be there. So we got him back into the hospital. We got him into the emergency room. The doctor examined him. Then he said, well, you know, we want to start an IV. So I went to get the stuff to start the IV with. I came back into the room, and here's the demon leaning over him, trying to draw the life force out of him. And I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, Ariel came forward, and she faced the demon and said, this one's mine. He doesn't belong to you. He belongs to the light. And the demon, whatever he saw on my face, it disappeared. It beat. It was gone. And later, when the young man recovered, I went to visit him one time, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm the one that brought you here, you know, brought you in and everything. He said, I had this dream. He said, and in the dream, there was this demon, and it was trying to take my soul. And then he said, and then an angel appeared, and she got rid of the demon. I told him, I said, well, it's just a dream. I said, it's just God's way of telling you he's watching over you. Because this young man was a chaplain's apprentice. And somebody, he had gone to a party, and somebody had put angel dust in his coke.
Okay.
So he kind of went crazy for a few days. Mm-hmm. But they discharged him because of, you know, what had happened to him. And he had PTSD afterwards.
Sure.
But I told him, I said, you know, it's just, I said, you're lucky it was only a dream.
Why did this man have the demon following him? Is that because of the thing that with the angel dust and the coke, or was there more to it?
No, it was because he was a chaplain's apprentice. He was a very spiritual young man. And that for a demon, that's a feather in their cap. They can turn a spiritual person away from the light. And that's what they were trying to do. It was actually trying to take his life. And if it had achieved that, it would have held on to his soul.
Well, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that especially someone like that who's devoting their life to God and mm-hmm. into a very positive way of thinking, that something could swoop in like that and hold on to a soul.
People don't understand. Demons can take earthbound spirits and utilize them. They will basically, there's no other way to put it, they'll basically enslave that particular soul and make it do its bidding. Like, say there's a place where that's sacred, that's protected, mm-hmm. where the demon cannot get into. It will send an earthbound spirit in to do the dirty work. And they utilize them. That's what they do.
Can they ever, let's say that chaplain would have died. Can mm-hmm. Would his soul ever be able to escape that? Is there ever a place where?
Oh, yeah. Because one of the archangels would be made aware of it. And they would have gone, you know, killed the demon and return the soul to the light.
Oh, I never thought of it where someone like that could have that happen. It makes sense if you have the person who's been practicing black magic and all sorts of horrible things and living a really horrible life. Yeah, I could see that person, being the buddy of the demon, but not necessarily the just out of their complete control. And because it wasn't even that chaplain's will to be.
No, it wasn't.
There.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's the thing. Demons are a law unto themselves. Mm-hmm. I've been dealing with them I'll be 64 in November. I've been dealing with them all my life. So I know how they work. I know what they do. And people think that demons are always the same, but they're not. They evolve. They grow just as angels evolve and grow. And souls evolve and grow, and they learn new tricks. And that's why I'm constantly hyper-vigilant about them and make sure that I keep an eye on what's going on in the demonic world, the darkness.
Are demons always things that never walked the earth, or could, let's say, Jeffrey Dahmer become a demon when when he died, just as an example?
He can. What happens when somebody like that dies? There is a place where the easiest way to explain it is, in heaven there's a limbo, and in hell there's a limbo. And that limbo is like solitary confinement. It's where you go and you're put, like Jeffrey Dahmer would be put there, and he would be tormented by the other demons for could be hundreds of years. And if he changes his tune and wants help and is repentant and has learned his lesson, then he can be released by Azrael. Azrael is one of the archangels that resides within hell to look for those who have wanted to change and go back to the light. He doesn't have very many takers, but every now and then you get one.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with June. In part two, can a human soul become a demon once they die? What's the life cycle between living and life on Earth, being on the other side and then coming back? Can a soul return to Earth at any place in time? And how did me, Tony Bruschi, die in a past life, according to June? Are black masses or shadow people demons? And what happened when June died before she was revived? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.